David Rush, NBC News, Washington.
Listen again on the hour when Stuckey's Roadside Refreshment Centers bring you NBC Monitor News.
The San Francisco Story, brought to you by Jenkel Davidson Optical Company, serving all of Northern California. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bud Heide, inviting you to be the guest of Jenkel Davidson Optical Company for another half hour of the stories of San Francisco, the story-making towns and hills that surround it, and the people who made San Francisco's past so colorful. These impressions, written by Samuel Dixon, are brought to you each Sunday morning at this time by Jenkel Davidson, stylists in eyewear with offices throughout Northern California. We hope you enjoy today's story. If you've had much driving experience, you may know how a car behaves when a cylinder is missing. The car chugs on, but it's a strain. Let it go, and the strain becomes a struggle. From bad, then it grinds to worse. The human body works somewhat the same way, but oddly enough, many people are quicker to get their cars to a mechanic than themselves to a doctor when something's out of whack. Take the eyes, for instance. Sometimes just a slight visual error or a little muscular imbalance can throw other parts of the body out of gear, causing headaches or dizziness or nausea or just plain crankiness. That's because your nervous system overcompensates for the visual defect without your suspecting it, and the strain takes its toll elsewhere. So remember, if you're not operating on all cylinders, the problem could be your eyes. Look after them by seeing your medical eye doctor every 18 months or so. Jenkel Davidson Optical Company, honoring bank credit cards at offices throughout Northern California. Now to our story. This morning, we want to tell you the story of a man who was a Californian more than a San Franciscan. Oh, certainly he was a part of San Francisco life in the early days, but as far as we know, no streets were named after him, no schools named after him, and there are few San Franciscans living today who even know his name. And yet, among other things, he discovered gold in California in the Feather River country a year before it was discovered by James Marshall in Sutter's Mill Race. But his discovery of gold was only a passing incident in a very full life, the life of one of California's greatest men. Now, perhaps it might be interesting to reverse the usual order and start our story with his obituary. Over his grave, and before a great assemblage, including thousands of Indians, these words were read. This man's page in history stands as clear, clean-cut, and rugged as yon mountains. Let these Sierra, whose heights his foot trod, be for him monument and epitaph. Let springtime zephyrs that woo the wild vine and golden poppy along the paths he loved so well chant for him requiem and dirge. For as long as the oak shall lend its beauty to the plain, so long as wildflowers shall spread their mantle of gold and purple on the hills, and so long as the golden Feather River shall flow, so long shall John Bidwell's life record stand. John Bidwell was born in Ashtabula, Ohio, in 1819. As a small boy, as a youth, as a growing man, and throughout his life, he had a deep love for trees, growing things of all kinds, but above all, trees. As a boy, he vowed he would dedicate his life to planting and growing trees, And as a boy, he reasoned that to successfully grow trees, one must be educated. So at the age of 17, he stood at the desk of the dean of the Kingsville Academy in Ohio. His clothes were torn, his shoes in tatters, a handkerchief slung from a stick over his shoulder containing all his worldly possessions. And he stated briefly that he wanted an education. He said he was from Ashtabula. And the dean demanded how he had reached Kingsville from Ashtabula. And the boy said he had walked. With no money in his pocket, sleeping under the trees in the fields, working a few hours each day for his meals, he had walked 300 miles to Kingsville to learn how to grow trees. Of course, he explained to the dean, he didn't plan to spend his whole life in Kingsville. When he was educated, he planned to go west to California to plant trees in California. Yes, young Bidwell expected to go to California across the Rocky Mountains. But the dean explained that that was impossible. No white men could cross the Rockies. However, he liked John Bidwell's spirit, and he could stay at Kingsville as long as he pleased. And after a year had passed, the dean sent for young Bidwell and offered him a position as teacher with full pay and privileges of the teaching staff. But Bidwell stammered that he was too young. The dean agreed that he was very young, but only in years, that his character, his perseverance and personality and high principles fitted him for the position. But, he warned Bidwell, now you are embarked on your life work. Forget your youthful dreams of a journey to California. Leave such things to adventurers. Find your adventure in a world of books, for you are destined to be a builder of men. But another 2 years, and Bidwell was again before the dean. This time he wanted to leave Kingsville. The dean said if he had a better offer from any other school, Kingsville would meet any offer. But Bidwell replied that he was giving up teaching. He was leaving for California to plant trees. He had saved $75, enough to take him across the Rockies. I've dreamed of it always, he said. And you told me I had steadfastness of purpose. It is now my purpose to go to California. The dean grumbled and growled, but finally said, yes, you have steadfastness of purpose and the stubbornness of a mule. You'll go to California to plant your trees and find adventure. Well, go, and when ill fortune comes to you, remember the things I've said to you today. But meanwhile, God bless you and prosper you in your stupidity. Bidwell's journey to California took him 6 years. On his journey, he taught school in St. Louis, in Iowa, in western Missouri. And once he took up and worked a claim of 100 acres of land. But claim jumpers seized his claim, and Bidwell, relieved that he could now continue his journey, offered no resistance. His enthusiasm for the West was increased to fever heat when on the road he met a traveler heading east. The traveler in broken English painted a glorified picture of California for the boy. Oh, it is paradise, he said. It is the promised land. Such wealth, I tell you, never have I seen. The fine cattle, the fine horse, the great mountains, the beautiful trees. Trees. Well, that was a language that John Bidwell understood. Tell me about the trees, he said. And Roubidoux, the great French naturalist and explorer-scientist, fanned the boy's enthusiasm with his word picture of the trees of California. And so John Bidwell joined a wagon train. At the foot of the Sierra, the leader of the wagon train, Captain Fitzpatrick, became pessimistic. It was folly to tempt the dangers of the Sierra. In all history, only one party of white men had crossed them, and he wanted to turn back. But John Bidwell said that if Fitzpatrick did turn back, he, Bidwell, would assume leadership of the train and pass on. Fitzpatrick said the party wasn't strong enough to brave the mountains. But Bidwell answered that the strong survive, the weak fall by the wayside. And so, led by Captain Fitzpatrick, the train pressed forward, crossed the summit, and worked its way down through the foothills to a village owned by a man who was called the Crazy Dutchman of the Sacramento. And he became Bidwell's lifelong friend, John Sutter of the Valley of the Sacramento. John Sutter respected young Bidwell, but he had a fault to find with him. Bidwell always had to be on the move. Why, he had been on the move, according to the story the young man told himself, from Ashtabula to Kingsville to Iowa to Missouri and then to California. To cater to Bidwell's yearning for travel, John Sutter sent him on expeditions to the far corners of his land grant. Sutter owned 2,000 square miles of Sacramento Valley land. Go north, he told Bidwell. In the country of the Chico Indians, you will find great buttes rearing their heads out of the plains. Find out for me how many people I have in the land of the buttes. And so it was that John Bidwell went to the country of the Chico Indians. And there he counted heads and reported back to Sutter that his people numbered 82 white men and 500 less than 20,000 Indians. Savages, said Sutter. Oh, no, said Bidwell, not savages. On the banks of the Chico Creek, I found a tribe of Indians, very poor Indians, it's true. The men wear no clothes at all. The women wear skirts of woven grass. But they're good people, John Sutter, friendly people. People who can be educated. People who can be trained to work the land and grow rich crops and plant great forests of trees. Someday I hope to spend the rest of my life with those people in that land of yours on the Chico River. I like your savage Indians. So John Bidwell and John Sutter worked together through the years that saw the fate of California written. Out of Chico on one of his expeditions, Bidwell found himself in the beautiful country of the Feather River. He saw the great trees. He uprooted seedlings and transplanted them where their chances of life were best. He turned the ground for his trees and fertilized it and came upon gold. This was in 1847. Gold was a pretty metal. It seemed to capture the rich warmth of the sun in its yellow depths. But further than that, gold had no value for Bidwell. He reported his find to John Sutter and then went about his business of planting trees and educating Indians. In 1848, James Marshall came to Sutter with news of gold at the mill race. And Sutter and Bidwell sat together and talked. And Sutter said, "Oh, Bidwell, I don't like it. When word of the discovery of gold on my land goes out to the world, then all my dreams of a rich empire of farms and orchards will be ruined. Men will come from all parts of the world and trample on my wheat fields and fight for gold." Yes, Bidwell agreed. They'll fight for gold unless we can educate them so that they will know the true value of gold. But Sutter scoffed. You can educate your Indians because gold means nothing to them. But you can't educate white men. And so the two friends made a solemn pact. They would keep the news of the discovery of gold from the world. But another friend of both of them, Sam Brannan, heard of the discovery from a garrulous mill worker, and the gold rush was on. Yes, the gold rush was on. And with the gold rush came lawlessness, thievery, murder, and the jumping of claims. Jumping of claims that saw Sutter's 2,000 square miles shrink till he was a poor man with all the world growing rich on the gold of his lands. John Bidwell, planting his trees, prospered. And as Sutter's troubles mounted, he turned more and more to John Bidwell for counsel. Until the night came when Sutter Bidwell and Sutter's son Jonathan sat and discussed the wave of crime that was sweeping the promised land like an epidemic of foul disease. There had to be law to control the criminals, and there could be no law strong enough to endure without the strength of a great power behind it. And so Bidwell and the two Sutters planned the conference that would write a charter for the domain of California. Planned a meeting that became the gathering of the delegates at Monterey and the convention that created the state of California. Yes, California became a state of the Union. But the lawlessness continued. and Bidwell in San Francisco joined the vigilantes in their efforts to put down crime. And the work of the vigilantes was done, and the Commonwealth of California came of age. And John Sutter, impoverished, spent his remaining years petitioning the Congress for recognition while Bidwell's work continued. We'll get back to John Bidwell in just a moment. You know, every now and then during some athletic contest, you may observe a tense little drama. Down on the field, on hands and knees, huddles a group of players and coaches, intently examining the ground. In search of what? Grassroots support? Four-leaf clovers? No, a contact lens. That virtually invisible little object that makes a visible difference in the performance of a lot of athletes. Floating light as a bubble on the natural tears of the eye's surface, these tiny plastic lenses provide the right degree of visual correction with a high degree of safety. Occasionally, the wrong blink can flip a lens, and then it's a game of pity-pat. On the whole, though, contacts help keep an eye on the ball through the most active wear. If you're thinking about swapping your glasses for contact lenses, your medical eye doctor is the man to see. And should he decide that contacts are right for you, then you'll be twice as right when you carry his prescription to Jenkel Davidson, specialists in contact lens fitting for a quarter century. Bank credit cards are honored. Now, back to our story. In 1860, John Bidwell sat with one William Dickey, and papers changed hands. And by those documents recorded under the seal of the government of the United States, John Bidwell became owner of 22,214 acres of land on the Chico Creek, acres that were called the Arroyo Chico Ranch. The two men shook hands, and William Dickey gave Bidwell a parting piece of advice. If the Indians cause you any trouble, hang 'em or shoot 'em, but don't stand any nonsense from 'em, and above all, don't try to reason with 'em. You can't reason with an Indian. Bidwell thanked Dickey for the advice. He said he would remember it, but he would not use it. It's easier to teach an Indian respect of the law than most white men, he said. There'll be no shooting or hanging of Indians on my land, nor any need of it. And there was no shooting or hanging of Indians on the lands of John Bidwell. He was now General Bidwell, wearing the braid of a United States officer. Indian babies were born and named Little Chief General Bidwell. Bidwell was counselor, doctor, teacher, friend, and judge to the Indians. They worshipped him as a white god, his word as their law. They worked for him and with him. They planted his fields and his orchards and pruned his trees. He built factories and manned them with his Indian friends. He became their spiritual advisor and their shrewd arbiter when they disagreed among themselves. And withal, he had become one of California's most respected and beloved citizens. In the year 1868, General John Bidwell was guest of honor at a banquet in Washington, D.C. He was then 49 years old. The chairman of the banquet eulogized Bidwell as a great American and a great Christian. He recounted his achievements, his years as a school teacher in the Middle West, his journey across the Sierra, his discovery of gold in the Feather River, his labors to make California a state of the Union, his fight to save California for the Union in the Civil War, his teachings, his philanthropies, his wisdom, his kindness, his Christian spirit. And then the chairman paused. John, he said, there is only one black mark against you. You're almost 50 years old, and you've never married and had children to carry on your good name. Well, John, what do you say to that? Bidwell stood up and laughed and spoke. Mr. Kennedy, my good host, I'm frankly so embarrassed there's nothing I could say if I wanted to. All I can say is, shall we join the ladies? Now, the men left the banquet table, adjourned to the drawing room, and joined the ladies. Chairman Kennedy led the guest of honor to a young woman standing at the piano. John, he said, this is my daughter Annie. And telling of it long later, Annie Kennedy said, the conversation just stopped and everybody turned and looked at the two of us. And so Annie Kennedy and John Bidwell were married. Yes, at 49, John Bidwell married and had 30 years of happy wedded life. He took his bride to the city he had founded on his ranch, Arroyo Chico, the city of Chico. Those next 30 years were busy years in the building of California. And John Bidwell, industrialist, naturalist, teacher, and grower of trees, at 80, was a strong man, strong of spirit and strong of hand. Now, of the remaining bit of our story this morning, I frankly do not know how much is fact and how much is imagination. But it was told to me as a page in the life of John Bidwell, and as such I give it to you. He sat one warm, sunny morning on a bench beneath the grove of trees he had planted in Chico. Sat his wife's hand in his and looked up into the trees. And his wife, speaking softly, went back through the years and retraced his steps with him. She talked of his boyhood, his travels, of his love of trees, and his vow that he would plant great trees, and of the years that he saw California grow. And then she spoke softly of their love and their marriage and their 30 years of wedded happiness, and she quoted the line, "The groves were God's first temple." They were that to you, weren't they, John? But Bidwell didn't answer. And his wife knew that he had died, sitting there beneath his trees, holding her hand. And when the Indians were gathered at his grave, these words were spoken. "Long as the oak shall lend its beauty to the plain, so long shall John Bidwell's life record stand." We have to admit it, Jenkel Davidson has got a reputation for giving people a fit. In fact, as optical companies go, they're about as fussy as you can get. Giving people the right kind of fit, you see, is really what Jenkel Davidson is all about. The precise fit in corrective lenses, according to their doctor's prescription, the comfortable fit in frames, according to their particular physical characteristics, and the attractive fit in a look that is right for them. None of it happens by chance. It's an exact science that demands complete attention to each customer's special needs, and that takes experience and care and, well, a certain degree of fussiness. Remember, with glasses from Jenkel Davidson, there's more than meets the eye. Jenkel Davidson Optical Company, honoring bank credit cards at offices throughout Northern California. And now, from all of us at Jenkel Davidson, a happy, happy Father's Day. You have been the guest of Jenkel Davidson Optical Company for the San Francisco story. The men and women of Jenkel Davidson hope that you have enjoyed today's program and that you will join us again next week at 9:05 when we shall tell you the story of one of San Francisco's unique institutions, the Mechanics Library. Many of these stories are to be found in Samuel Dixon's book, Tales of San Francisco, on sale at all bookstores. This is Bud Heide, speaking for the Jenkel Davidson Optical Company with offices throughout Northern California.
This is KNBR, AM and FM in San Francisco. The weather picture for the Bay Area, fair through Monday and cooler tomorrow. The high today, 65 to 75. The time now, 9:30.